I'm Jason Zern, and today I'm going to talk about some of the work we've been doing with BlackBerry, often kind of regarded as one of the forgotten children of Rosebreed. But we're trying to do a little bit of work with trying to unravel some of the sweetness genes associated with BlackBerry. So just as a bit of a background, Rosaceae is actually quite a nice system to work with, and there's a large degree of synteny between all the crops within the family. So we can use a lot of that information going from crop to crop to help us improve our genetic resources, which is part of how we've been able to advance or make such large strides in the last few years. And when we look at genes that are involved in sweetness and sugar production, often those pathways are highly conserved across Rosaceae because these crops are all, we're breeding them for their fruit, and or often with the exception of roses, but we're looking at fruit and everyone likes a sweet strawberry or blackberry or apple. And unfortunately, though, there's very few genetic resources available for BlackBerry, and this is kind of due to its complicated genomic structure. So cultivated BlackBerry, for those who don't know, ranges in ploidy from 4X up to 12X in North America, and there's genomic contributions from probably about half a dozen Rubus species in there. And when you throw in the fact that they're autopolyploid, everything just kind of goes out the window. And so trying to move forward, we need a system that we can use to try and genotype some of these cultivated blackberries, but because to date so far all we have is just a handful of SSRs, and we want to move forward and have more genomic resources available. So we're investigated a technique called HybSeq. It's short for hybridized sequencing, and it's a great option for crops like BlackBerry, where you don't have a lot of genomic resources on hand. It's essentially a targeted sequencing approach where we go through a genomic enrichment step by designing baits, which are RNA probes, that have biotin labeling, and then we do a pull down either through a bead type assay, or this can be done on a typical microarray type platform, and then sequencing what we pull down from our genome. And so the nice thing about this is that we can use related species to develop some of these baits. And so luckily with BlackBerry, we have a pretty high quality genome sequence for black raspberry, which we can use and is actually sometimes a genome contributor to cultivated BlackBerry. And then we also have a diploid BlackBerry species as well that we have sequencing data for that should be released hopefully soon. And so we use some of this information as well as a reference transcriptome that move forward with identifying some of these genes involved in sweetness. So our objective for the study were to identify genes involved in sugar production in BlackBerry and then try and develop some DNA-based tests that can be used for DNA-informed breeding. Because at this point, we currently don't really have anything for BlackBerry. And we'd really like to have some tests that we can help improve sweetness. So to start with, we tried to identify all these genes. So we know that sweetness is highly characterized within apple, and so we were able to get 789 malus genes that have been previously shown to be associated with sugar production in apple. And we also identified three synthetic regions with the help of the resources on GDR. And these three regions are unique because they have QTLs that have been previously mapped in at least two of these crops, either apple, peach, or strawberry, to these regions. So we know that there's genetic variation in these regions that seems to be associated with soluble solid content and sweetness. And so we went in and extracted all the genes in these synthetic regions from the strawberry Vesca genome assembly, as that's the closest related that we had to BlackBerry at the time, and extracted some of these genes that are in that region. From there, we blasted these genes against the Rubus reference transcriptome on GDR and pulled out all the Rubus-related genes. From that, we did an exon prediction and sent that off to Arbor Biosciences, who developed our baits and did our sequencing for us. And so we had And we did some sequencing on 40 samples. So we had 20 samples from the University of Arkansas breeding program and 20 samples from the USDA breeding program in Corvallis, Oregon. And with those, we had a good mix of high soluble solid content plants as well as low soluble solid content plants. And we, because of the complex nature of Rubus, we wanted to see if we could identify haplotypes. And so instead of doing the traditional Illumina sequencing approach, we actually did a PacBio biosequencing approach to get longer contigs and try and unravel some of that unique, identify some of these unique haplotypes that would be present within BlackBerry. Finally, we did variant calling using a freebase pipeline that had been optimized for dealing with autopolyploids. And we did two different mappings with the variant calling. So we did a mapping to the Hillquist assembly that we have, which is the diploid BlackBerry, as well as a mapping to the Rubus occidentalis, and then did independent allele callings on each of those. And then we did a statistical modeling to identify associated alleles. So our statistical approach looked something like this. First, we started off with a Welch's t-test to identify significant alleles, and then did a false discovery rate correction using the Benchmini-Hochberg correction method. From there, we wanted to make sure we didn't have any false positives and that these SNPs were behaving equally across our population. So we did identified any population structure using principal component analysis to identify unique clusters of or groupings of our sequenced material. And then we did a modeling where we looked at both population effect differences, accounting for that with a genetic by group interaction or allele by group interaction, as well as a within group variance where we were looking at a allele nested in group modeling. So from there, we identified going back to identifying the Rubus genes, so we identified 279 possible candidate genes from the Rubus reference transcriptome. From that, Arbor Biosciences was able to make around 9,000 probes for us, and that covered a 2x tiling path across all of these genes. And that accounted for about 99% of the submitted exons, which was great, and it covered 98% of the gene space. So we had pretty good coverage across all of these genes, and we're really happy with how this bait design turned out. So that was really exciting, considering that we were working off of kind of a related genome and pulling in all of this data from relatives. After the PacBio biosequencing here, you can see some of the results of the distribution of our read lengths, and we got around 500,000 reads. These are circular consensus reads. So when PacBio biosequencing is conducted, you have an insert of your sequence, and it kind of goes around in a continuous loop, sequencing the same, and if your regions are short enough, it can sequence the same region multiple times. And then from the software or the Archer software, you can assemble that into a consensus sequence. So all of these are consensus sequence reads, which should help improve some of the errors that you often see in PacBio biosequencing and should give a lot higher quality reads. And we see that from our graph in the lower right-hand side. This is a distribution of our FRED scores on our reads, and FRED scores generally go from 0 to 42, and you can see here that our average FRED score is around 40 and a half. And so this indicates that these are pretty high quality reads and that we expect very low amounts of error rates, and we should have a pretty good call quality moving forward. With these statistical results, we did the calling, and we identified around 1 million loci different variants for each of these. And it really, this is due to the polyploid nature of BlackBerry, and we're looking at a wide swath. So lots of variation within 40 samples that are polyploid. From those, only around 700 or so were significant after doing the Welch's t-test and accounting for a false discovery rate. So we're really excited about that, because in an earlier analysis that I did on this at Rosebreed, I essentially had to tell everyone that I hadn't found anything yet. So this is a great, great improvement. From the principal component analysis, here we did two separate looks at it, one using the mapping results from the Hillquist assembly, or where we aligned all the reads to the Hillquist assembly, and the other one where we aligned reads to the Rubus oxidation. President Tallis' assembly. And it's kind of tough to see here, but we have three groups from our principal component analysis that showed up using k-means clustering in our Hillquist assembly, and four groups of our Rubus Occidentalis assembly. And from that, we were able to take all of these groups and we established them in our next modeling steps, where these were our groups that we would later compare for either a group by allele interaction or nesting our allele within group. So our statistical results from that show that we have around 164 significant alleles despite population structure. And these seem to be significant across both allele assemblies or assemblies accounting for the significant alleles despite population structure. And we didn't see any difference between that any of the alleles associated or performed differently between these groups. So all of these alleles seem to be like they are great candidates. What's interesting is we've done a little bit further work to look into this to see how many of these alleles were in common between the two assemblies. And what we found was that only about 20 of the 160 had an overlap. And we went in and looked a little bit further and found that there seems to be something up with the way that Freebase is making allele calls. And all of these alleles are found in each of the assemblies, but it's just being called differently for how the mapping is being conducted or the reads are being mapped against the genome. So that's something interesting to investigate in the future, and definitely a call for better tools needed for mapping polyploid or mapping in reads in polyploid organisms. So what's next? Well, currently we're working on trying to validate these markers. So we've been in contact with LGC and they're going to develop CASP assays for us. And we've got 192 samples that we'll be using for validation. These plants were originally developed as part of the Rosebreed program and phenotyped during the 2015 and 2016 growing season. So we've got 2 years of data, and they seem to be quite consistent across both of those years. And so we'll be validating these markers on these populations and hope to get them into black breeding pipelines very soon. And with that note, I'd like to acknowledge all my collaborators here on this project. There's quite a large group of people that have been making this work possible on just this one project. Notably, Mandy Driscoll at the USDA. She's been helping me out with a lot of some of the bioinformatics stuff and getting some of these Freebase pipelines to work out. So she's been very helpful and instrumental in some of this work and allowing me to focus on some other Rosebreed projects. And with that, I'd like to acknowledge our local or national partners and our international partners, and at this time I'm open to any questions.
Yeah, we've definitely got time for at least one.
Yeah. Cameron.
Yeah, so great. You found a whole lot of phenotypic differences with various alleles here. So what's the absolute phenotypic differences you'll find in SFC, for example, or however else you've measured?
So the absolute difference in SSC, so you're wondering what our trait distribution is like within the drip. When the individuals that we selected for sequencing, we purposely selected that they'd be on the high end and low end of a distribution of samples. And so from these populations and the phenotypic data that we have on the validation populations we're using, the SSC varies from 8 bricks up to about 16 bricks, depending on the individual. And so we've select for the initial sequencing results for those 40 individuals, we purposely selected individuals on the extremes. And so there isn't really much of a distribution because it's more of a bimodal. But with this validation process, there is quite a bit of variability between that. And we expect that multiple alleles from that are significantly associated here will be interacting to contribute to SSC overall. And so it's not really going to be moving forward for DNA-informed breeding. This isn't really going to be a cut-and-dry one-marker test. You're probably going to have to run a suite of markers and then identify which combinations of markers you have that could lead to higher SSC in more of a quantitative fashion.